VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I am a sick version of Adam VanWee.
So we'll apologize up front for any hacking and coughing and grumbling you hear in the background. But I assured him that the hardest thing in the world is not to keep me talking. It's probably to keep me from talking.
And I can assure you that's correct.
So if he is unable to try very hard to do that today, who wins and who loses? I don't know. Anyway, to all our regulars, welcome back. Thanks for always being here. You're the reason we get up and do this, even if we're not feeling well. And by the way, I feel marvelous. So,
good.
At least half of us are really good. If you're just stumbling on the show for the first time, either by accident or on purpose, try to stick around for a while. Got some interesting things coming up today. With a little good fortune, we expect to get a call in today. A lady who is very involved in one of the sectors that is hot right now, has been on the show before, and has written a book about an upcoming event in the market that is going to pretty dramatically change one of the major asset classes around the world. So it'll be interesting to hear that and what it means to the average investor. But first, being the kind of show it is, we have a public service announcement from a very nice lady named Esty. Good morning.
Good morning.
What is going on with you?
Well, the St. Vincent de Paul Society at a beaches conference in Jacksonville Beach is having a low country boil benefit.
Okay. When and where?
Pardon?
When and where?
Today at 6:30 p.m. at St. Paul's Catholic School in Jacksonville Beach.
Okay.
Well, great. And that benefits the church?
It benefits the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. We're an agency that helps people with rent and utilities and different programs for seniors and new mothers. And we have lots of different programs that we help local people with. 90% of the money that we get from donations goes back to the community. There's no paid employees. We did about 1,000 community hours last year with volunteers going out and visiting people.
That's fantastic.
Yes, and you picked a wonderful day for it?
Yes, it's beautiful out here in Jacksonville Beach. The weather's nice, no wind, lots of sun.
Wonderful. 6:30 tonight,
yes.
St. Paul's in Jacks Beach. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, 224 5th Street North in Jacksonville Beach.
Okay, everybody, grab your charitable dollars and stick them in your pocket and head out and have a little fun at the beach tonight.
Bring your Kentucky Derby hats. We're having races.
Now that is a good idea.
And mint juleps.
Can't beat it.
We also have a silent auction.
Okay. Well, then bring your credit cards.
Bring
or
your
whatever.
Money.
Yeah, you know those free things always cost a lot, don't they?
Yes, they do.
All right, guys. Well, that sounds like a great charity, and good luck.
And thanks for all you
do.
Thank
you. Okay, bye. Thank you so much, Adam and Dad.
Bye-bye. Bye. That sounded familiar.
Yeah.
Sounded like somebody named Van Wee back there.
No. Other side of the family.
Toward the end. Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, back to national finances, back to personal finances. Of course, charitable contributions are still deductible, so that
absolutely
that comes right
when
back
they go
in
to your church. That is
still
deductible.
Get a receipt, people.
Although
important.
A lot of people are losing that this year with the higher standard deduction.
That is true.
That does not mean you should not stay charitable, though.
No. And a quick note on that: if you use the higher standard deduction to not itemize anymore, you don't pay any more taxes because you can't deduct your charity.
Correct.
You just get it in a different form. It's not a loss by any way, shape, or form. And, of course, if you remember, people who are 70 and a half and are taking required minimum distributions, if you ever want to make your contribution, call us and we'll tell you how to do it to add on to your tax savings.
We talked about that last week.
We did, indeed.
A great strategy if you are of that age where you're required to take money out.
Yeah, if you're charitably minded, I trust it's really not toward Uncle Sam most of the time.
Hope not.
So if you can shift dollars from Uncle Sam to the charity of your choice, it looks like a win-win to me. All right, well, if you were hanging on as the shows were turning over from the real estate show to ours, you heard Howard say that he got me to smile in the next room as they were signing off, and I told him as they were leaving I wouldn't have been smiling had it not been for yesterday.
Yeah.
But yesterday kind of saved the day. If you got enough voice, you want to talk about it?
I'll talk about it a little bit, yeah. It was a rather strange week in the market. As you mentioned, most of the gains came on a big rally on Friday. The rest of the week, the market just seemed to do nothing, kind of aimless. Days when futures were up significantly ended up way down, and then vice versa. And Friday really didn't appear to have much momentum going into the open, and then just
The good news.
Yeah, and just kind of that's been the trend over the last few
weeks.
It
has been, yeah.
But just kind of a slow, steady climb throughout the day, ended up all three indexes up more than 1%, so really not bad at all. The NASDAQ ended up 1.3% for the week, and both the S&P and Dow were down 0.2%, so pretty much flat there. But tech did see a nice rally this week. Almost every other sector was down, though. It was, in fact, telecom, healthcare, and consumer staples all posted more than 2% losses on the week, and financials and industrials were both down more than 1%. So tech really, really carried this rally, or not rally, but carried the week, made it look a lot less bad than it could have.
Yeah, we'll spend a minute talking about jobs, but I want to tell everybody that Dr. Ellen Wald is on the line. And we will be taking her the second we get back after the first break. So, Ellen, if you can just hang on, that'll work for us. Yeah, what about jobs, Ed?
The big data point released this week was the jobs data on Friday. And it was a report that could really be interpreted a number of ways. It was a miss on the headline number of about 30,000. So the expectation was 193,000 new jobs. The actual was 164,000. But 30,000 were added to previous months, which was that almost the exact difference between the miss there. So kind of overall a neutral report. The big headline number was the unemployment rate, which dropped down to 3.9. So the first time we've seen under 4 in many, many years. There was a little bit of disappointment around wage growth. It was 0.1% instead of 0.2. And we'd really like to see that number higher. So all in all, kind of a bust on the report, but definitely not a terrible report either.
No, in fact, there's some things that I could clarify on it. In fact, one of them I will clarify, and we're both being afflicted a little bit.
Yeah,
today,
I'm supposed
apparently.
To be the sick one.
Yeah, no kidding. If I got to give you a couple of quick things in the minute right before the break. The unemployment number and the way we compute it is a little misleading, and I'm going to clarify that in the form of our trivia question today, which I'll give you after we talk to the doctor. And the other thing is that the three-month average on jobs is the highest it's been in years and years and years. And what happened, it looks like, is people came out of the chute hiring people like there was no tomorrow, and that pumped up February to those astronomical numbers. So it's averaging out over March and April. And what we have is a tendency over a three-month average to be absolutely huge in job creation. So I would not worry about any little technical miss that anybody's talking about in there. It's absolutely irrelevant. All right, well, we're going to run a little bit, and I'll see if I can get my throat cleared out, and then we'll get Dr. Ellen Wald on the phone the second we come back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have with us Dr. Ellen Wald. And some of you who have been loyal listeners for a long time may remember she has appeared on this show once before. Ellen is an expert in the energy business who has long studied the oil situation, including in the Middle East. And what's happening now is that the big company, the Saudi Arabian company, has announced a while back that they were going to do an IPO, and her timing is impeccable because she just wrote a book called Saudi Inc., and she's going to tell us about it. Good morning, Dr. Wald.
Good morning.
Thanks for calling. How are you doing?
I'm great. Glad to be here.
Good. Book selling?
Of course, of course. It's terrific. And people in the Jacksonville area can come by the Barnes & Noble on San Jose Boulevard in Mandarin and pick up a copy. And I'll sign it for them on Sunday at 2 p.m.
Tomorrow?
Yes, tomorrow, 2 p.m. Come by.
Okay. Barnes & Noble. All right. Well, we know you've been in this a long time. I'm curious, what caused this book? Was it their announcement, or was it just something you were dreaming up? How'd you get involved in that?
Well, the book has been a long time coming. I've been researching the Saudi oil company Aramco since for probably about the past 10 years. It was actually the subject of my doctoral dissertation, believe it or not. And the book really kind of came together in at the beginning of 2015, end of 2014, when OPEC decided that they were not going to cut oil production, and oil prices just plummeted after that. And I realized that this was a strategy that the Saudis were pursuing, and that I could explain it to everyone, and kind of grew and grew from there into this book that really takes a look at the history of the Saudi oil industry and how they got to where they are today.
Most of us who are conspiracy-oriented say that they do this periodically to us. They drive the oil prices down so that they can close down our domestic production so that then they can raise the price and make more money. Is there anything to it?
Not quite motivated by that, but that's definitely, I think, what ends up happening in practice. Because, you see, when oil prices are very high, you get a lot of new production opening up, both in the United States, but we also saw new production coming from Venezuela, from Brazil, from other places as well. And then, you know, then you get a lot of oil flooding the market, and that pushes prices down. And Saudi Arabia has in the past decided, okay, you know, we're going to, as a big part of OPEC, we're all going to cut production and try to keep the prices up. And this time, Saudi Arabia said no, because everybody else in OPEC said, we are not going to cut production. And Saudi Arabia said, so you want us to cut production and the rest of you not? No way. We're not shouldering the burden for you when we can produce oil for the lowest cost. So prices fell for everyone, and everyone suffered, but the Saudis suffered the least.
Now, the oil closed yesterday higher than I've seen it in quite some time. What's going on?
Well, it was up almost 2%. Closed. Oh, we're so close to $70 a barrel right now for the U.S. benchmark. It's like we just can't seem to break that last hurdle to $70. So what's going on is, first of all, when you know, you were saying the Saudis try to, you know, kind of shut down U.S. production. Well, they didn't succeed in shutting down U.S. production. What they did succeed in shutting down was Venezuelan production. Venezuela is producing almost no oil, and that has really taken a lot of oil off the market. And so supply and demand is much tighter, and now we're seeing all sorts of geopolitical issues like this upcoming decision on whether or not the U.S. is going to reinstate sanctions on Iran, and all of these geopolitical issues are just kind of pushing the price of oil up higher and higher every so often.
It's an uncertainty factor then.
Exactly. And the reason that we're seeing that now is because supply and demand are much closer in line. There's less of a glut of oil, so now these uncertainty factors are really playing a role in pushing the price up.
Is OPEC dead?
No, OPEC is not dead. In fact, OPEC is like a bigger party than ever. They've invited the Russians to come on in, and Kazakhstan, and all sorts of other countries are suddenly kind of jumping on the OPEC bandwagon. They won't call themselves part of OPEC, but they're there. I've been to the OPEC meetings. They're hanging out with the OPEC guys. It's basically like one big OPEC party.
Why do they kind of go against each other once in a while?
Well, you see, they're friends when it comes to oil, but outside, all bets are off. So the oil ministers can, you know, Russia and Saudi Arabian oil ministers can hang out, they can have dinner together, they can agree on oil policy, and then, you know, they can be fighting each other over Iran or Syria or anything else outside of oil.
We've been hearing from the administration that we are now energy independent and have become net exporters. Is that somewhere around true?
Well, I don't think that we can ever be energy independent because the energy industry and the oil industry is a global industry. And we need to export our oil, and we still import a lot of oil. And part of the reason that we import a lot of oil is because the type of oil we're producing is a very, very light kind of oil. And the kind of oil that our refineries need to make gasoline, they need a mix of light and heavy crude. So we can export our light crude, and we're exporting it to China now, in fact. But we still need to import heavy crude from elsewhere. We get it from Venezuela, we get it from Canada, we get it from Saudi Arabia, and so we still need that mix. So I would say that we are energy secure, but not independent, per se.
What's the sweet spot from an American standpoint for oil prices?
I think it's somewhere between 70 and 75, perhaps. I mean, we are going to see gasoline prices going up this summer. And that's a factor both of rising oil prices, but also the fact that gasoline prices go up in the summer because the type of gasoline that we use in the summer is more expensive to produce. It helps, make sure the air quality is okay. But we can handle slightly higher gasoline prices. We're still not talking anything near like what we saw in 2013, for example, when oil was like $130 a barrel. So we're still below, I think, the point where we can handle it. But definitely between 70, 75, maybe as high as 80 is still good. It's good for producers and it's good for consumers.
And when you talked about the Canadians, years ago when I was first getting into this, there was a problem with the Canadians when oil dropped below 80 and then dropped below 70 and 60 because their break-even point for the oil sands was so high. It was rumored at that time to be about 85, and I've since read that they've gotten really good at this, making money thing by lowering their break-even point. Is there truth in that?
Yeah, there's definitely truth in that. They are definitely lowered their break-even point. Same with producers in the United States. But the Canadian tar sands have a problem, which is that they have a hard time getting their oil out of where it's being produced and getting it to where it needs to go. So it can either go to the United States, but they've had some problems. Remember that Keystone XL pipeline issue? So they need to build more pipeline capacity if they're going to send it to the United States. So instead, when Keystone XL just hit that roadblock, they wanted to send it to the west coast of Canada and export it to China. And so they were going to build this pipeline called the Trans Mountain Pipeline that would take it to Vancouver. And then that got stymied in political issues as well. And so a lot of Canadian oil has to be sold at a lower price than the market could really handle it just because it's so hard to get it out and to get it where it needs to go.
I'm sure Trudeau had his foot in that one somehow.
Well, he's trying really hard to get that pipeline built, believe it or not.
Really? I'm shocked.
I know. So was everyone else when the issue came up. But really, it's really basically Vancouver and that city that's really stopping it up. And so he's really pressuring them hard to basically get over themselves and let them build this pipeline.
What's happening in the fracking business? You hear story after story, rumor after rumor. Does it really cause damage? Is it really dead? Did the demand fall below it? What's going on? And why, related to all this, is natural gas staying so cheap?
Well, natural gas is so cheap because natural gas is cheap. There's a lot of it. It's not like oil. We ship a little bit of it globally, but not really. It's really very much... It's used basically where it's produced, and we are producing a lot of it. So natural gas is really staying cheap, and that's good for the economy because a lot of our power plants are shifting over to natural gas-powered plants. So that means that electricity bills can stay low. When it comes to fracking and oil and things like that, they've definitely made a lot of improvements. The fracking industry is alive and well in Texas, in New Mexico, and all of those areas, even coming back in the Bakken region in the Dakotas.
Okay. Could you hang on after the break? I got a couple more germane questions. Would that be okay if I put you on hold for a bit?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, when we come back, I want to ask Ellen about the investing side of this. What is the Aramco deal going to mean for people like us and people like you who are investors? That's what a lot of people are interested in right now. First off, trivia question brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, 636-7888. We're looking at unemployment this week being so low at 3.9. Well, that's called U3. The old-fashioned way to compute unemployment is called U6. U6 takes into account disgruntled workers. U6 has fallen dramatically. How many years has it been since U6 was as low as it is now? And I'll take that even close. Don't go away. This is the Bamley Financial Hour. Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And, George, if you'll hang on, we want to return to Dr. Ellen Wald, wrapping up a discussion on energy. And my big question that I want to handle while we still have her undivided attention is for investors. Welcome back.
Hi.
Hey. Now, my big question. Since we deal with investments and manage investments for other people, what is the IPO, which I know is a small part of a big company, which makes it a big IPO, what is that going to mean to how we invest in energy? Would you be a buyer?
Well, that's a really good question. And part of the issue is we don't yet know a whole lot about Saudi Aramco because it's been a private company for so long. Now, if you really want to learn all about the history and its strategy, definitely pick up my book.
Good for you.
Because it'll give you a great background in terms of where they're going. But when it comes to financials and things like that, we don't yet have all the information. And so we're going to have to wait and see when they, you know, release their financials and they do their roadshow to see what it's like. But one of the things I can tell you is that this is a company that produces oil for anywhere between $2 and $10 a barrel. They have managed to fund almost the entire Saudi budget. They have paid in the past taxes of about 85 to 90% to the Saudi government. And on top of that, they fully fund all of their capital expenditures, which have been massive. So this is a company that makes a lot of money. When they talk about valuing it at $2 trillion, that may not be all that far off.
Well, it sounds to me like you're talking about a debt-free organization.
And just for reference, the biggest company right now is Apple, and it's not even $1 trillion in market cap.
Right.
So that's a big company.
That is a big company. What's the time frame for the IPO? Any idea?
Well, we really don't know. It's the kind of thing where they seem to have gotten themselves all prepared, they've gotten the paperwork ready, and they're really waiting for what they see as the perfect time. And they may be waiting for oil prices to go up. Right now, it also seems they're waiting for a decision on what exchange to list on because there's some variability there. Some of the people want to list on the New York Stock Exchange, some on the London Stock Exchange, some want to just list on the Saudi Stock Exchange, which would make it a little challenging for, say, American investors to buy in. But the Saudi Stock Exchange has recently gotten emerging market status, so investing in, you know, ETFs that do that could definitely get you a piece of Aramco.
Are they going to agree to follow GAAP accounting standards the way we know them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
You didn't have to think about that very long.
Well, they've talked a lot about their accounting standards, and they are definitely going to have to follow those.
I don't know the answer to the question, but it's going to be interesting for sure. And energy as an investment this year, as you probably know, is just racing ahead. Finally, it's been a long time. What would interrupt the price cycle now?
Well, what we could see is a roaring back of the shale oil industry and just a huge amount of output there, and that could definitely push prices down. There are definitely some hints that that might not happen quite as much as we thought. There are some infrastructure issues that are hindering some of the fracking companies from really expanding the way they'd like to. We're talking about pipelines, and we're talking about employment. They just say they don't have enough people to fill the jobs that they need to get done. So it does seem like that it's a possibility that we could have a whole lot more production, but it's not seeming quite as likely as we thought.
I think the story of the next year or so is going to be shortage of workers, trained, educated, and available workers. We're just not getting that participation rate in the society for the laborers, and it's starting to show. I'm a little concerned about it because it's going to be inflationary on its face with labor going up. So we'll have to see what happens. Tell the people again where you're going to be if they want to meet you and get a sign book.
Yeah, tomorrow I'm going to be at the Barnes & Noble in Jacksonville, the one on San Jose Boulevard in Mandarin. I will be there at 2 o'clock signing copies of Saudi Inc.
Very good. I really appreciate coming on because I don't think there's anybody out there who has the thorough understanding that you do. By the way, the book's name is Saudi Inc., and it's not like writing about an American company. I know that, and I haven't read it yet, but by the next time we talk, I bet I will have.
Well, I would love to come back on and hear what you think.
Any old time.
Welcome anytime.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Good luck tomorrow.
Thanks. You have a great day.
Thanks. Bye. George.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
Sounds like she's pretty current on the oil industry. I'm a chemical engineer. I worked in 12 countries for most of those for a company that supplies technology to virtually every refinery in the world. And I tied financial computers, business computers, into the control computers. And it was pretty interesting working in Saudi Arabia for a year. We dealt with a jet fuel from Aramco to the airports. And Exxon is so closely tied. Exxon is closely tied to Aramco. And there's something investors should watch out for. Exxon, for several years, has been running ads saying they could convert algae into fuels.
Mm-hmm.
I've been involved in something outside of Exxon that they need to complete their processes. If that's done, it would have a significant effect on the pricing of fuels in the oil industry. However, the other side of that is our president is doing the right thing to increase economy, and increasing the economy here, increase the economy around the world, and we will need more fuels. So it really needs some serious experts to look and see where we're going. Just so you know, almost any hydrocarbon can be converted into gasoline and diesel, et cetera. That includes switchgrass and bamboo and trees, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just about the cost of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And algae may be one of the low-cost items, which Exxon is looking at. They're trying to grab patents to lock onto it, and they're not about to dump the price of fuels, but be well aware of what they're doing.
There have been rumors for decades about the carburetors that would make a car get 150 miles per gallon and so on, and that they were always kiboshed by GM. I've never taken stock of any of that, but I absolutely agree with you on the conversion of alternative forms, because if that happened too fast, the oil price would probably do something like a collapse. And wouldn't help anybody.
Well, I think that the patents will keep it from doing it. The systems I know of are patented, but Exxon has no idea they exist and what they do. And I can't talk talk about it in the specifics. But I've been involved in both areas, and I know. And I may get back into it sometime in the future. But it looks like she is really current. I worked for the Saudis in the 80s, early 80s. And when they started, I think they could produce a barrel of gasoline back in the 40s and 50s for maybe 20 cents a barrel.
Wow.
They have, they're playing out their original fields, but they discovered new fields about 15, 20 years ago. And so they will continue to be a big player, especially if Venezuela keeps making a mess of their country.
It's going to take some radical change down there to see anything different.
Absolutely.
But it's going to be fun to watch, no doubt about it. Maybe you want to pick up a copy of Ellen's book and see what she has to say about it. The royal family's changing a lot, too. You see now there's kind of a new openness and a new American-friendly nature of things that I'm a little bit optimistic about. So hopefully it'll work out well for everybody.
A lot of pressure from Trump. A lot of pressure from Trump.
Yeah, absolutely true. Well, thanks, George. I appreciate it. You have a good day.
You too.
All right, we're going to take a couple more calls. Ron, Dave, hang on. We'll get to you right after the break. Trivia questions still out there. And if I get a chance, I'd like to talk to the graduates. But as always, what's the most important on this show is callers and whatever you want to talk about. And so we do have lines open, 222-825.
Let's try that again.
Never mind. We'll say it in the commercial. Adam's got the sore throat, I got the cough, and I can't get my numbers straight. Other than that, isn't this a lot of fun, folks?
We're a mess.
Live radio, absolutely live radio. Okay, we'll be back in just a few seconds. Don't go anywhere. It can only get more interesting, I think. Anyway, this is the Van Wee Financial Hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial, what's left of us hour, because some of us are not 100% well and others are just kind of goofy. Anyway, I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And trivia question sits out there. How many years has it been since U6, which is the real unemployment rate, was as low as it is right now, because it just ticked down? I'll either take the year or the how many years as it's been, come up with the same answer, and I can do that math. So without further delay, good morning, Ron.
Good morning. How are you today? Well, I hear Adam's not feeling very well.
But not so good, but thanks for asking.
Yeah, it'll pass.
Okay, good. Hopefully so. My question today is, I've heard this term about selling stock short, and I have no idea what people are talking about. What does it take to sell a stock short? I know you have to have money in the account, and I know it's a very risky endeavor.
Of those things are true. What it takes, you have to deal with a broker. We, as registered investment advisors, cannot do this. It's one of the things that are not allowed because of the risk factor. And being fiduciary with people's money requires that you don't do things that are outlandish. So you have to get something like a traditional brokerage house, and then you have to get permissions that are set up in the account, and you have to fund it so that should you lose money, they don't have to call you and say, pony up. They just take it out of your account. But here's the process. Say XYZ, in your opinion, is too high and it's going to go down. So you call the broker and say, I want to short 100 shares of XYZ. So the broker physically borrows 100 shares from someone who has authorized the broker to do that. The broker then sells those shares in your name. Now, when the time comes that something has happened, either it went up or down, then they will get sold, or they get bought back, actually, because he sold them short. So they're going to buy them back and replace it to the original owner. So if the stock went down, let's say it started at 100, you shorted it for 100, and it went down to 90. Now, you go out one day and you buy 100 shares on the market at 90 each, and you just made $10 a share times 100. Those shares are returned to the person from whom they were borrowed. You pocket the balance. Now, let's say it goes up to 110 instead, and all of a sudden the cash in your account is not looking all that good relative to the difference. The broker has the right then to do a margin call they can go out and actually buy the shares at 110, pay back the other person, and charge you the $10 difference. So how certain are you the stock's going to go down? That's the question of the day. And you, it's a risk strategy. It can be a leverage strategy, but it's a risky play one way or the other. But that's what the term means. And another thing people should know is that when you borrow a stock, let's say you borrow a, and you're going to short a real high-paying dividend stock, during the time that you have it borrowed and sold, you do not receive the dividend. The owner of record of those shares gets the dividend. So don't ever buy it thinking you're going to make up the difference in the dividends. It does not work. That okay. just adds another level of risk to it.
Okay.
Would I do it? No.
No. I can see you already. This is not for the faint of heart. what type of a time frame would we be looking at, though? Would there be a limit as how long you can let this go on?
Generally, there's no, to my knowledge, there's no like 90-day limit or anything like that. It kind of depends on the monetary situation. As long as you're willing to take the risk and financially able to back up any losses you have, they should be willing to go on. And even if someone wanted it back and decided they didn't want to do the lending anymore, they'd find someone else. So there's no theoretical limit to it except your wallet.
I got it. Okay. Well, thank you very much. I thought this was way too risky and way beyond my comprehension. So I'm going to stick to my old mutual funds and just, try to play it smoothly. I don't need a rocking boat at this age.
The best advice I could ever give anybody would be to listen to you.
Okay, well, I'm not that smart. But
you nailed that one.
I know enough not to do this.
Thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
Hey, thank you very much. Have a great day, gentlemen.
Thanks. Captain Dave, still swaying in the merry breezes?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm back in the United States.
Oh, okay.
Enough with all this this talk. I mean, place your bets, ladies and gentlemen. Place your bets. Is that a record for a swing in one direction and then the other?
Probably so.
Up 40, down 40. Holy
people who listen.
I'm in the hold position. I used to have 1,000 shares. Now I got 40 because of that reverse split. But that's lunacy. I mean, I would love to see a psychological profile of the people who actually own that stock.
Yeah, it would be just like you, and it'd be the scariest thing in the world.
Hey, listen. But at this point, I'm just holding it. I don't care. It'll be what it is. But I watched that from Jamaica, and I went, oh, my God, this is worse than a crap game.
Oh, well, welcome back to the land of having news, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, I just had to call because I got your email. And
I love it.
What is this?
Yep,
it's like if something good happens, it's like there's a sudden orgasm.
No good deed goes unpunished. You know that.
Yeah. All right, guys.
You'd be
have
good.
A great weekend.
Bye. 20 years ago, a lady named Mary Smith of the Chicago Tribune wrote a graduation speech for colleges, and my wife remembered it this morning and looked it up, and I've reread it, and I thought, my gosh, nothing really new under the sun here. It's so appropriate today, and I wanted to read it to people, and I'm giving full credit to her. But it may have to wait because callers go to the head of the line. Good morning, Don.
Hey, how you doing today, bud?
We are great. How are you?
Okay, look here.
What's happening?
I want to boast Saudi Arabia. I've got a lot of friends that drive trucks in this country. They drive in various countries, American companies, Saudi Arabian companies, and they're all telling me that the Saudi people are some of the nicest people in the world. And when they talk about investing in that country, I would highly recommend it. Because I don't know if anybody that's lost any money with Saudi Arabian oil. Do you?
No, it's nice to get some perspective on it, because I don't think I've ever met a Saudi.
I haven't either, but I can tell you it's really easy to be nice when you have more money than anyone
yes,
else.
You do have a point. No doubt about it.
Well, they got the oil. And
yes, they do.
They got more oil over there than anybody.
Yep.
And I think Saudi Arabia has been fair and honest with us because the oil, what they call OPEC, they have protected the American consumer over here. I've seen it before where oil was running almost $5 a gallon, and it started dropping down to about $3 a gallon, something like that. I've seen it go all the way down to 78 cents a gallon right here in Jackson.
I remember well. I've been around a long time.
Because the Saudi Arabians done that, and I want you to know I investigated. I want to make sure. It was Saudi Arabia, and I love Saudi Arabia. I always will.
Well, we appreciate your perspective.
What's that?
We appreciate your perspective, since we're both kind of in the dark about those things.
No, Saudi Arabia is a good country. It's going to be on our side no matter what. It has been. And back, if you remember back in the 50s, it was Saudi Arabia who started selling their oil. And it was so cheap that gas was running 17, 18. Kerosene was running like a dime a gallon. I remember that back in the 50s.
Yeah, I do too. But, I'm old like you, and I remember like you. It was a lot of fun.
Well, Saudi Arabia is a good country. I'm raising my hand to wave at them because I'm really happy with them.
Good. Well, we appreciate your sentiment.
Thanks, Don.
Got to run. Be good. All right. I'm going to read the May graduation speech in a couple of weeks. And next week, we have a special guest. And Adam, you want to remind people about that?
Yeah, my friend Craig is coming on the show. He is a venture capitalist. And I spoke with him this morning. I actually FaceTimed with him. He is attending the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting this morning. So that was kind of fun. He's out there with Mr. Buffett. And he's going to be telling us about his experience investing in small startup companies prior to them being even really formed in a lot of cases, and how he identifies them and how he picks the ones that he wants to put money in, and how he raises, he actually forms groups that do these investments. So it should be a really interesting show, and hopefully you all will tune in then.
It was 2001 in July, the last time the real unemployment rate was as low as it is today. It has not gotten back there since 9/11. You listen to all the talking heads out there and you'd swear it was something Obama did. It's just not so, people. And right before we go, just speaking of Warren Buffett, I read a headline today that I loved. It said, Warren Buffett should invest under the radar. Advice from Mario Gabelli telling Warren Buffett how to invest. On that happy note, see you next week. This is the Ben Lee